Hi everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of The World of YA. My name is Maureen, and I am a librarian who lives and works in central Indiana. So on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about a couple of things because due to various personal crises, the May episode got pushed back and pushed back, and finally I decided to just combine May and June into one hopefully not too monster episode. So we're going to be talking about The Perilous Guard by Elizabeth Marie Pope briefly, and that's going to be a follow-up from April's historical fantasy episode, which is a great episode with a good friend of mine, Barrett, who is also a librarian. And so if you are interested in the topic, I do suggest checking that one out, because we talked a lot about some of the implications of historical fantasy, steampunk, alternate history, and a lot of great books in that episode. And then in this episode, where I'm additionally going to talk about some of my favorite YA that I have read in the second quarter of 2016, because believe it or not, the year is half over. Sorry, but it's true. And then finally, I'm going to be talking about some of the books that I'm looking forward to in the rest of the year. And I will close out with some of the YA that I am currently reading. So I'm just going to go ahead and dive right in with The Perilous Guard. So this is a book that is very important to me personally. And that is in large part because when I was in middle school, I really discovered YA and middle grade fantasy. My school library didn't do much in the way of, like, separation by age ranges, so we had, like, Andre Norton and Susan Cooper and, like, Jean Webster's Daddy Long Legs all mixed up in the same collection. It was kind of great, actually, and I really appreciated having a freedom to kind of roam that library and try different things. And one of the things I found is that I really loved fantasy and historical fantasy, and The Perilous Guard in particular was one of the books that really opened that world to me. So it's one that I have a huge personal attachment to. Like, I can't possibly overstate how much this book has meant to me throughout my life from about age 13 on, which is a pretty long time. And it is one of two books that were written by Elizabeth Marie Pope. She sadly was not prolific, but they are both gems. I also am very fond of her other book, The Sherwood Ring, and recommend checking that one out too. But for me, The Perilous Guard is kind of the pinnacle of those two books, if you can say two books have a pinnacle. And it is a book that is set in Elizabethan England, or rather just pre-Elizabethan England. It's set at the end of the reign of Mary Tudor, Bloody Mary, that is. And Kate and her sister Alicia have both been sent to be ladies-in-waiting to the sort of semi-exiled Princess Elizabeth. And then Kate is further exiled to this mysterious house called the Perilous Guard. And she discovers that it is a pilgrimage site for people who believe in this ancient deep magic, and that it still exists in England. There are a lot of reasons I love it, but I think that first and foremost, it is Kate herself. Kate is very prickly. She's unhappy with her constraints, but she also reaches out to people. Her guardian's daughter, Cecily, and his mysterious, angsty brother, Christopher. And so it's a book that's very much centered on Kate, on her experiences, on her learning to grow into herself and trust in her own abilities. And a lot of it is about being a bit of an outsider. And that is true from the beginning, even in Princess Elizabeth's court. She's very much a more of a tomboy, more interested in masculine things, or coded masculine things, I guess you could say. And that is, in some ways, maybe the biggest flaw of the book is her judgment of other women. And I think over the course of the book, that's somewhat alleviated, but not entirely. I am not entirely comfortable with how it treats Alicia, for instance. But at the same time, I think there is a lot of power in how Kate learns to be most fully and truly herself, and to recognize that who she is and who her powers and strengths lead her to be has value and can save the day. And the other thing to know about this book is that it is a retelling of the Tamlin ballad, which kind of has sent me on a decades-long love of retellings of the Tamlin ballad. If you know of any, please send them my way. I'm always happy to check out new ones. I actually have a whole list of the ones that I've read on my blog because that's how I do things. And so, for me, there are three great Tamlin retellings. Diana Wynne Jones's Fire and Hemlock, which is absolutely batty and brilliant and beautifully written and amazing and wonderful, and you should read it. Pamela Dean's Tamlin, which is also brilliant and wonderful and beautifully written and full of the best description of college years that I think I know of, and you should definitely read it. And The Perilous Guard. And I think that what The Perilous Guard does, which neither of the other two do, is set it also within this historical framework, so that it's set at this age of transition. And we see this turn from Mary Tudor to Elizabeth, but we also see this turn from the people who believe in the old gods, and to worship them in this kind of prehistoric way, to Christianity. And I think that this could be done really badly, and, you know, I recognize that I'm speaking as someone who is a Christian, but I think that Pope actually treats this with a lot of respect, I almost want to say, with a lot of complexity and with an understanding of what drives people that keeps it from being trite or stereotypical, at least as far as I read it. And I think that Pope also does an amazing job of portraying this eeriness, this kind of otherworldliness of the landscape. The Perilous Guard is set in this amazing landscape of this ancient forest, and the castle itself and all of its environs are described in a way that really brings them so vividly to life. And also this kind of otherworldly eeriness of the lady and her followers. It's such a vivid, beautiful description of this lost world and lost culture, that it's really always struck me. And even when I reread The Perilous Guard today, I have this feeling of being, you know, much younger and being just enchanted by the descriptions, by the images. So that is definitely a strong point for me. And then I should also mention that this was one of the first times that I became a shipper. And in fact, I would say that in terms of romantic pairings and books, Christopher and Kate are one of my favorites. And I think it's largely because Kate doesn't put up with anything. Like, Christopher starts off being just totally moody about all these things he's done, and Kate has no patience for it. Like, she does not put up with his moaning. And you see them over the course of the book really, in a quiet way, recognize each other as equals, as partners, and as the person that they value the most in the world. I have mixed feelings about the kind of fake out ending at this point in my life, but when I first read it, I was entirely like cheering it on. So I think that is very much an age thing, perhaps. But regardless of that, they are definitely still some of my favorite characters and romantic pairings. And I think maybe set me up to love Peter and Harriet from Dorothy Sayers as I later did. As I said, this is just a book that for me is really kind of epitomizes a certain kind of historically focused and grounded kind of historical fantasy. And it's one that is so incredibly important to me personally and in my reading history, in my learning to love this kind of genre and what it can do and how it can speak to us, that I felt like I should definitely talk about it a little bit. So at this point, I'm going to move on from The Perilous Guard, and I'm going to talk about some of the books that I have been reading from May through June of 2016, specifically YA. I will include one adult book. And I'm just going to go through in the order in which I read them, essentially. So one of the first ones that I read in May is Peace Locomotion by Jacqueline Woodson. And I realized after I read Brown Girl Dreaming last year that I hadn't read anything else by her. And since she's such a classic YA author, and since she has so many books that have been published already, I felt like I should really go through and try to read some of her backlist. And I came across a copy of Peace Locomotion, so I picked it up. And it's very different in some ways from Brown Girl Dreaming, but I also found it just as powerful, and I really appreciated the story it was trying to tell. I realized, I'm going to talk a little bit later about Tanita S. Davison's Peas and Carrots, and that one is dealing with the foster system, and when I wrote my review of it, I said that there weren't very many books that do that. And I realized that, in fact, Peace Locomotion is one of the other ones that does. And does with a lot of empathy and understanding of the situation and the characters and their feelings. So that's one I would definitely recommend. It's an older title, but I think that it totally holds up. It didn't read as dated at all to me. And then the second one that I wanted to mention is newer, it's from last year, Kekla Magoon's How It Went Down. And this is one where I don't feel very qualified in a certain sense to talk about it, because it's definitely dealing with the aftermath of the shooting of a young Black teenage boy, which unfortunately has all too much resonance in this particular historical moment, and I want to be very aware of the fact that I am white myself, and that in talking about it, I don't want to insert my own voice too much, but I think that Magoon does a fantastic job of showing the situation, showing how different people feel about it and their motivations, how some of them are selfish motivations, some of them are more caring about Tariq and his story and himself. It was woven together of different narratives from different points of view, and I think that she also does a great job of showing both the ways in which they contradict each other, but she also does give us a sense through the different narratives and through their different insights of who Tariq was and what he probably actually was doing. I think I've seen some reviews that say, well, the whole point is that you can never really know, and I don't think that's accurate. I think Magoon actually tells us pretty clearly who he was and what his motivations and his actions were on the day that he was shot. And so I just found it a very compelling, thoughtful look at an issue that could easily have been done really, really, really badly, and I think that in, as far as I can judge at least, this one does not do that. So, and then the third one that I wanted to mention is Miss Marvel, and this one is the latest volume that I've read, which is called Last Days, and I know that it's connected to some larger events in the Marvel universe, which I'm not entirely aware of, but it is a sort of apocalyptic story. That is a hard word to say, my apologies. And I really appreciated that instead of looking at an apocalypse or a world-ending event, however you want to talk about it, and positing that everyone is going to become animals, that they're all going to become selfish and horrible people. Instead, we see that people keep reaching out to each other. And yes, people panic, but we also see again and again that Kamala and the people she's surrounded herself with are trying to find a different and a better way to face this imminent tragedy, I suppose you could say. I also really appreciated that there's a huge focus in this one, in particular, in all of Ms. Marvel, but in this one, it is really foregrounded how many important, valuable relationships she has with other women. And there's Captain Marvel, there's her mother, there's, now I've forgotten both their names, but her best friend and one of the other girls from her school. And so it really becomes kind of pointed that a lot of the story is, in fact, women reaching out to each other. And that definitely means a lot to me. And segues nicely into my next book, which is Exit Pursued by a Bear by E.K. Johnston. I know I talked about this one a little bit and how I was looking forward to it in the April episode, or I'm sorry, the March episode. And it totally lived up to my expectations. I wasn't sure exactly what to expect from it, and it was so beautifully written in a way that was and is incredibly emotional for me, and that I find hard to explain because it doesn't have any specific direct bearing on my life, and yet I found myself in tears throughout the entire book, and I felt almost as though something had been healed, something that I didn't even have a name for. And I think that it's really the idea that the world we live in, that the society we live in, that the way we treat victims is a given. And Exit Pursued by a Bear pushes back against that over and over and over again. It says it doesn't have to be this way. We can treat people the way we should treat them. It's possible. And in the light of the Stanford case, in the light of so many other things that are going on in the world, I found it inspiring and challenging and healing and heartbreaking all at the same time. This is one that I really am hoping is honored with awards this year, because I think it absolutely deserves it. Johnston's writing is fantastic, and the characters are really well drawn. Bonus, it has some Shakespeare retelling woven in there. So all in all, this one, you know, like I said, I was there for it because I love E.K. Johnston's books, but it more than exceeded every expectation I had for it. So then on a much lighter note, well, sort of lighter, I also finished The Raven King by Maggie Stiefvater, which is, of course, the fourth book in the Raven Boys cycle, fourth and last. Overall, it did a lot of what I wanted. And I am trying to not spoil it because even though it's been out for several months now, I just feel better avoiding spoilers if I can. But a lot of the hopes that I had for where the story was going to go were actually fulfilled, which is nice. I do have a minor but significant issue with a particular scene at the end of the book. If you want to know more about that, you can ask me on Twitter or email me, whatever you want to do. And I'm happy to talk about it, but I just don't want to spoil it in case anyone is still waiting to read it. And it is, overall, I thought engaged with the mythology and with the questions that the series as a whole had set up pretty well. I have fairly mixed feelings about Henry, who's a newer character who's introduced, who seems awkwardly shoehorned in a bit. And I know that there had been some complaints about the lack of diversity in this book, and it seemed like he was there to address those rather than as any real function of the story. And I'm not sure that he did it super well. So I don't know, I haven't heard any particular feedback from the Asian American community in terms of his representation, but it seemed a little bit iffy. Nonetheless, as a whole, I thought it was a great wrap-up to the series and very satisfying. So that's definitely one that I was happy about. And then I also read Scarlet Epstein Hates It Here by Anna Breslau. And this was one that I was looking forward to and interested to see how it showed fandom. As it turns out, it was largely focused on fan fiction, which hasn't been my personal real experience with fandom per se, so it was a little less personally engaging in that aspect, but I ended up really liking it quite a bit. Scarlet is an interesting character, and I appreciated the fact that Breslau shows her as a feminist character who also has to learn over the course of the book that she is judging other girls and their decisions, that she is not a perfect person or a perfect feminist. And it took her a while to get there. I'm glad I sort of had a heads up from somebody else that that was the case, because I think otherwise I might not have kept reading. But I think that the payoff once it gets there is definitely worth it. So overall, I thought this one was really funny and fun, but also really, really thoughtful about all of the issues of fandom and culture and high school and class and a lot of other things. So overall, like I said, if you're able to give it enough time to move past that judgment stage, then I think it's one that's definitely worth reading. I did mention already Tanita S. Davis's Peas and Carrots, and I have written a little bit about this one on my blog, but it's a story about a foster family and a girl that they are fostering on a somewhat temporary basis. And Davis herself was a foster sibling, and I think that really shows in the portrayal of being a foster family and being fostered. And it really treats both Hope and Des with a lot of sympathy and understanding, and with a really rich depiction of who they are as characters. There's nothing stereotypical about them whatsoever. I really liked the fact that the foster system in this case is treated as a positive. Davis's note does acknowledge that it isn't always, and that that is a valid story, but I think that this is a story that needs to be told as well. So if you are interested in siblings, in families, and found families, and just a good portrayal of the foster care system, any of those things, definitely do check that one out. It also includes a shout out to one of my favorite books, which is The Goblin Emperor by Katherine Addison. So that was really fun to read, and just come across that reference in the story. And then finally, I'm going to mention the one adult book I'm letting myself put on here, which is Every Heart a Doorway by Shannon McGuire. And McGuire is an extremely prolific, accomplished author at this point. Every Heart a Doorway is a standalone, which is a little unusual for her. It's a novella, which I think is also a little unusual for her. And it is a take on what happens when you come back from a portal fantasy world. So, you know, it is the Pevensies after they come back from Narnia, Alice after she comes back from Wonderland. What actually happens? And in this case, the idea is that there's a school for children who have come back from these fantasy worlds, from these Neverlands, for instance. And as Nancy, who's the newest arrival, comes, they start being murdered. And it is a really interesting, thoughtful book. It has what I believe is a very good depiction of an asexual character, actually Nancy herself. I'll just go ahead and spoil that. I overall loved the writing. I loved the world. I loved the characters. I thought it was really, really well done. I wasn't personally in love with the ending, but I think that that is in large part a function of just how short it is. It isn't, you know, it is very much not quite a novel. And I think if there had been just a little more time spent on the ending, then I would be a lot happier with it. But overall, this was one that is really, really well done. So if you like the idea of having this kind of thoughtful take on what, on the implications of portal fantasies, on what happens after you come back and all that sort of thing, I would definitely look for this one. So in the last section of this episode, I am going to talk about some of the books that I have been looking forward to in the coming rest of this year. Okay, so there are a couple in July. One is P.S. I Like You by Casey West. And I am just generally kind of a fan of Casey West's books. I find her a fun, light contemporary writer, and so I'm just interested in that one because of my previous enjoyment of her books. The next one in July is This Savage Song by Victoria Schwab, who has been kind of exploded with her Darker Shades of Magic, Shades of London series, which has been published as adult, and I think it's totally a YA crossover, but this is her first book that's being published as YA after she's written those. And so it sounds like it will be maybe a little bit dark, maybe a little bit gritty, and I'm really interested to see what she does with that in a YA setting. And I overall have enjoyed her YA books in the past. I guess I get to be kind of a hipster about liking her books before they were cool or whatever. But so I'm also interested to see how this one compares to the archived series or The Nair Witch, for example. And then in August, I'm really interested in The Infinite Risk by Anne Aguirre, which actually is the conclusion of a trilogy, and I haven't read the earlier books, so I'm planning to go back and try to read those before that one comes out in August. But it sounds like it's kind of a epic dark fantasy, and should be really good. And then, of course, a ton of books always come out in September, so just going kind of down the list here. I have really liked Sharon Cameron's books in the past, and she has a new one coming out called The Forgetting, which is being billed as science fiction. It sounds maybe somewhat dystopian-y, but given that I have liked her books quite a bit in the past, I'm definitely going to check that one out. And then Vasa in the Night by Sarah Porter is also out in September, and I am just very, very, very enamored of the Vasilisa the Beautiful folktale from Russia, and this is based on that. So folktale retellings are catnip for me. Vasilisa is always going to be like super catnip for me. So I'm not, the premise as I have read it wasn't incredibly appealing to me. Nonetheless, I will definitely be checking this one out just because, like I said, I can't resist the idea of a YA Vasilisa retelling. And then also in September, Fran Wilde's Cloudbound comes out, which is a companion book to last year's Updraft. And these ones sit right on the dividing line between adult and YA. And I think they technically have been published adult, but then they also won the, Updraft won the Andre Norton Award for YA. So who am I to argue with the science fiction and fantasy writers of America? And I did very much enjoy the first one, and I'm definitely intending to check out the second. Finally, in September, I'm really intrigued by Three Dark Crowns by Kendare Blake. I really liked Anna Dressed in Blood, and I haven't really kept up with her books since then, but the premise and The title of this one are intriguing, and I absolutely love the cover, which is a terrible reason to want to read a book, but I do what I want. So, yeah, I definitely want to check that one out in September as well. And finally, this one I'm not as personally invested in, but I know it will be super big, so I'm just mentioning it. Strange the Dreamer by Lainey Taylor, also out in September. And then in October, there's a book called Ironcast by Destiny Soria, which sounds like it is a very Maureen-y book. It is all about magic and a 1920s nightclub and all kinds of exciting things. So I'm really hoping it lives up to the promise of the description that I've seen, because if it does, then it will definitely be one that I like a lot. And then in December, I have two I wanted to mention. One is Spindle, also by E.K. Johnston, which is actually the companion to last year's A Thousand Nights. And I didn't know that this book was actually coming until quite recently, but I'm really excited about it just because at this point, I feel like Johnston is pretty much an auto-read author for me. And I loved A Thousand Nights a lot, and I am hoping that the magic continues. And then last but not least, Secret of a Heart Note by Stacey Lee, who actually has two books out this year. Outrun the Moon is already out. I have it checked out from the library, and I am hoping to get to it really soon. But Secret of a Heart Note is actually her first book, as far as I know, that is not historical fiction. This one is a contemporary romance, and it sounds like it's about a young perfume expert. So that sounds so intriguing, and I really liked her first book and have heard really good things about her second, so I definitely intend to check that one out in December as well. So finally, in terms of books that I am currently reading, I am in the middle of Sarah Bees Brennan's Tell the Wind and Fire, which I had to set down because I was getting way too invested in the characters, which is, I guess, a good problem to have, but nonetheless, I just need to take a little bit of a break from it. But I'm definitely going to be going back to that one. It's a magical retelling of A Tale of Two Cities, which doesn't sound like it should work, but for me it definitely did. Or at least does so far. Like I said, I think the characters are really intriguing, and the take that Sarah Rees Brennan is doing in terms of retelling A Tale of Two Cities is really thought-provoking and interesting. And I also have just started, and I mean, I'm like five pages into Ava Jay's Beyond the Red, which seems like it will potentially be really exciting and kind of a fun, interesting science fiction action adventure. So hopefully that turns out to be the case. So that is it for this time. And next month, I'm going to have Kelly Jensen of Stacked Books and Book Riot on, and we will be talking about realistic fiction. And so I'm really looking forward to that episode. So I hope you will join us for that one. As always, you can follow the podcast itself on Twitter as World of YA Pod. You can also follow me at Elvin J Knight. And feel free to give me any feedback, thoughts, responses to the episode that you might have. I would love to hear from you. So thank you so much for listening, and have a great month.